David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 437. I'm your host, Steve Raker the Dashing, down in the comic book bunker, along with Kevin the Grim and Andrew the Lion. We're the Warriors 3 of comic book podcasting.
Oh, that's better than the Cowardly Lion.
Well, I do like to eat.
Marvel Noise is a semi-monthly podcast, once again, with a scope that includes anything Marvel-related, anything we feel like making noise about, basically. We're the podcast proudly sponsored by Nobody, and on the home stretch of our 17th year. Now, I'm still in the throes of having had this tree recently fall on my house and piercing my roof and all that, so... It is now time for another one of our renowned recent read roundtables.
Now, as you, long as you weren't under it, like Spider-Man was under that giant weight and you're holding up the tree.
With the drip was there, though, let me tell you. Like the water pouring down, that was happening.
Oh, that's not good.
Now, our recent read roundtables aren't necessarily recent books, just what we've recently read, because Andrew throws in like an old episode of Kid Colt Outlaw every once in a while, or a Patsy and Heedy or something.
Those are good comics, Steve.
But I've got to start off. I have a 5-issue limited series that came out recently and I've had on the stack with story and art by Steve Skroak, and it's Clobberin Time. And this series read like a love letter to the old Marvel 2-in-1 book, especially when Marvel 2-in-1 would feature like a multi-issue arc, but it would still change up who the team up was with each month. That's basically what this is. We've got the Thing with the Hulk, then the Thing with Wolverine, the Thing with Doctor Strange, the Thing with Doctor Doom. And it's all narrated by this imprisoned watcher who doesn't stay imprisoned for the whole time. And the nemesis is the psychopomp, this guy who used the captured watcher to locate items of power across time and space. So he's this armored up time thief who wants to use his amassed powers to reboot reality, which leads to some meta comic booking fun. The characterizations are great. The situations, there are ample number of comedic moments that are well played. The Skroak art is great with, you know, lots of detail, lots of robots, alien monsters and environments, Doombots. Skroak did a great job with this series. Really good. Clobberin Time.
So is Nick Fury still the man on the wall, Steve?
No. Or is he?
Or does he want you to think he's the man on the wall?
He's something, right? What? He's is he living up there in the Watcher's place? I thought the Watcher was back.
Yeah, so that's why I'm like, I don't...
I forget how they ended it. Slott did something with him in the FF, didn't he? Left him somewhere. He was Nick again. He was wearing a thing that looked like a S.H.I.E.L.D. uniform, but he was sort of still cosmic.
Let's go with that.
All right, what do you got, Kevin?
All right. Well, I remember last time you were really hoping that I had read all up on the end of the first Krakoan Age. So I made sure with this episode that I was up to date, and even more up to date than probably anyone realized after my declarations over the previous year that I'm done with X-Men, you know, and then you got to move forward. And how I thought, like, the promo was pretty abysmal.
Yeah.
And but then I also realized that I'm like, don't market to me. Like, that's one of the things I always say is don't market to me. Like, I'll figure it out. It's fine. I try new stuff out anyways. And one of the other things I say is, if you really enjoyed a book before and you like those characters, like maybe you want to give the new team like at least one issue and just check out how it is. Unless it's like a creator you absolutely hate, then, you know, you're probably fine. And
plus, it'll give you ammo for your complaints.
Yeah, that's true too.
Now, sometimes you just got to read the book, you know what I mean, and just see if it's any good, right?
I appreciate the argument that people are like, well, if you're going to complain about this thing, like, watch this thing or read this thing. I mean, you also don't have an unlimited amount of time. So at some point, like, you're going to be talking about something that you don't know about.
You can't let some comic book podcast tell you what comic is good or not. You got to read the book yourself.
But if we tell you about something that's good, it's good. So you don't have to worry about that.
If it's approved by the Marvel Noise Authority, it's you can be sure of it.
Exactly. That's what I was getting across. Yeah, so I got all the way up to my Uncanny X-Men 700. I hope that numbering works out somehow. I mean, things got a little dicey there, but I mean, I don't think the ending to that era was as good as like when Fall and Powers started and all that. Like, well, there's some personal choices that, you know, that I'm like, oh, I don't know if you should have done that or whatever. And then there's also some stuff that just needs to be done.
I had to go into the anniversary issue and these number ones with the mindset of the Krakoan thing is already broken. Right? Like, that's done. It's not,
yeah.
It may or may not be some of these creators' fault, but they got to move. You've got to transition from that at this point. So I felt like they handled this transition phase pretty well.
I mean, I
could have been worse.
I mean, of course, I can think of better transitions.
I mean, they're stuck in this spot, though, right? Where it's like all this—I mean, this great stuff just ended, and this other stuff hasn't gotten established yet. And yet, you know, what kind of stories do we tell here?
But the funny thing is, you see one panel with like Storm at the United Nations, and that's totally the news story from like 2 or 3 months earlier. Probably 2 or 3 months. I'm just guessing. But I remember there was a news story. It's like, oh, like you thought it was going to be all like generic and greatest hits, or you thought the X-Men wasn't going to surprise you and do all this new stuff anymore. Well, guess Storm is the president of the United States. And seeing that panel in that issue, I'm like, that's totally where it came from, right? Like, they saw that one panel, and that's the story they ran? Like, it's gotta be.
Funny how things work that way.
I know.
What are they gonna do with the Robert Downey Jr. reveal, you know? Like, so.
It's just, there's funny stuff like that. But all that being said, I did read From the Ashes, A New Beginning, X-Men number one, by Jed McKay and Ryan Stegman.
I too read this book. Yeah, right.
I mean, it wasn't a bad book. What did I think? It was as great a beginning as the other beginning to other things? No, but I mean, if I was all filled with rage and everything, I don't know. I guess it had dissipated, or I just came at it and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna give this book a shot. Try it out. I mean, there's always those things, even when I like started, when you're getting introduced to like Frank Quitely, and you know, he has some weird designs for the X-Men, or he draws people a certain way, and you're just like, man, that character looks weird. Like, I definitely have that moment when Stegman's drawing Beast.
Oh yeah.
Like, I'm just like, what is he drawing?
Yeah. It's like, does he feel like that was good, or is that what he's trying to convey, or is he not hitting? Like, you know, it's hard to know what. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, did he think this is a funny Beast? Like, did he think this is a great Beast? I assume this is the Beast he wants to draw. Like, I know this Beast is supposed to be somewhat different than the other Beast, but I don't know if it exactly looks like a Beast I've seen in recent memory. And then the whole juggernaut with the, if it's spray paint with the X on the outfit, it's totally like that Fantastic Four cartoon where the thing had to have that graffiti and he spray painted a four on his chest.
Yep.
Like, things like that. I mean, of course, it is going to be, I'm not digging the designs, but who knows? Maybe I'll be digging the designs in 6 months to a year. Like, the Frank Whiteley stuff grew on me after a while. I mean, that remains to be seen in this issue. But, I mean,
how long can Stegman
separate myself from some of the stuff, because I would rather them to be doing other things in the story.
Yes. The same. I felt the exact same way, except it still read and was entertaining.
Oh, that's what I mean.
Do you know what I mean? Like, this isn't the team I want assembled. This isn't necessarily the X-Men book I want, but it was a good read.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad read. I'm like, and someone else that was looking for something like this might enjoy this a lot more. I mean, it's funny, when I was thinking of other things that I would rather be reading, it's like, I don't know, maybe I would rather be reading about, like, some accountants going, oh, how we're going to relaunch this nation, and then doing charts and graphs about, well, we lost this amount of money, and this is how much it takes to rebuild the country, and then this other country will lend us the money towards our rebuild effort. But I'm like, that's not going to be a fun story that I don't think anyone wants to read in a Marvel comic.
Yep. Day 3 of negotiations.
Exactly. Dr. Doom offered us a piece of land. But yeah, I don't know. It's just weird that they're hiding out in Alaska here.
Yeah.
And using an old Sentinel factory place, which reminds me of, like, the Bendis team. They were in an old, like, Weapon X facility. Or if you want to go even further back, I guess you could say it's the Australian outback era of the X-Men. We'll see. I mean, there's not really a huge mission, I don't find. Like, it's just like them surviving and sort of where they go. And that's my whole thing. I'm like, I don't know where they go. Like, I don't know what they do. Like they've lost everything.
But Australian outback time.
Maybe they'll tell us.
Time to head back to the Australian outback.
Exactly.
Yeah. Can Ryan Stegman stay on a monthly book for a while? That's a tough pace sometimes.
Yeah.
He hung in there from the Superior Spider-Man for a while, didn't he?
Well, that's where I think I was, like, when he was announced for Venom, I was just like, oh, he's not going to be on that book very long. But I guess he kind of hung out a little bit more on Venom than he did on some of the other Spider-Man stuff. So, I don't know. I guess we'll see. I mean, I think they're going to push this out on a more than monthly pace, and maybe
they'll alternate arcs with artists. So, we'll see.
I mean, I don't think anyone, well, I shouldn't say anyone, but most artists wouldn't be able to keep the pace that they're pushing anyways.
Andrew, you still at the table?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Poke Andrew, Kevin. Poke him.
I'm here.
He's closer to you than he is me.
I guess that so.
I can't reach. I think for Kevin it's faster if he goes over the North Pole and down around the...
Wow.
Well, that's a big table.
Well, I have one that kind of relates to Kevin a little bit. I was thinking, I don't know if you guys remember digital comics, but
what?
They had this whole thing how it was going to be the death of print and all that stuff. And what's funny is I'm realizing, like, Marvel is awash in reprint books all the time. Oh, yeah. And it's just so funny that, I mean, I didn't know either, but remember the big thing? Because growing up, Steve, you remember Marvel Tales, Marvel Triple Action, all that stuff. They don't have reprint series, but they reprint just books. All, I think they're doing like the entire original Secret War. Like, it's just fascinating to me that, and I know obviously going to be like, look, Andy, it's cheap for them. They don't got to pay anybody, all that or whatever. But I'm just saying there were some credible discussions about how it was going to crush everything. And I'm like, people love the page, man. Even these books, I bought plenty of reprint books and everything. Even in the modern age, it just, I don't know. It was one of those funny things where I'm like, yeah, I guess it's print in some ways isn't going to hurt. And that's floppies, which I know are also kind of, that's somewhat controversial. You know, some people are trade waiters or whatever. But yeah, I think that it's not going away. But this leads me to a book with a significant chunk of reprint. And that is Uncle Scrooge and the Infinity Dime.
You stole one of my things. I was going to talk about that.
Oh, okay. I cannot talk together about it if you don't.
Yes.
Okay, so this is, as you guys, I think I've described it. I really enjoyed the dumb Disney variant covers for Spider-Man and bought them. Like, I don't buy extra, but if I see them, I've picked up, I don't know, 4 or 5 of them or something. I'm enjoying it, and I'm glad to see them bring that in. That being said, I've read some Ducks. I'm not a Duck guy, which seems so weird to be like you're in. It's probably the most popular American comic book in the world. And yet it's fine, but I was never like, gotta get that Barks, man. Like, it's okay. I don't know.
Did you ever read The Life and Times, the Don Rosa?
I read
Scrooge McDuck.
The one where he goes to the Klondike, I think. Is that the one? He goes to strike his fortune up north. Yeah, it was fine. Like, I don't know. I think I'm just not the target market for this, maybe.
Wow.
I mean, but I did enjoy this. This is basically, okay, we're going to have the multiverse introduced with Scrooge, and they take the reprinted story in the back where Uncle Scrooge is messing with Donald and the nephews, and now they're going to take a spin where that never happens and Scrooge gets super evil and takes over. And I will say I had some fun with it, but I might have liked the reprint story better.
That's fine.
Christmas on Bear Mountain. But I did enjoy the main story. But yeah, I think I like Christmas on Bear Mountain better, which is the original one. But this is, it was fun. You know, I do know the mythology about his lucky dime, the first dime he earned, and how a lot of the plots are about people trying to steal that. So, and in this instance, one variant of Scrooge steals from all the other Scrooges. So the other Scrooges have to team up to go against him.
Ooh.
But yeah, it was just funny that it's like $8 because it's two comics, but one of them is one that, if you're a Duck guy, I can't imagine you don't have Christmas in Bear Mountain. But do you have it on mediocre paper? Question you need to ask yourself. Do you have it on?
Did you get the Frank Miller cover?
I got no. I didn't. No. I got the, like I said, I like all these guys that are doing, there's like a whole crew.
He got the J. Scott Campbell cover.
I think they have, I'm going to guess they're Italian, but yeah. They're doing all those, like the Giuseppe and DiPolito and Pastrovicchio and all those guys. So I got one of them, the one of him diving in that looks quite nice, airbrushed with the nephews and the cloud behind it. But yeah, it was a weird kind of can I say neither fish nor fowl for the first one?
Yeah,
They don't bring in much of the Marvel U or anything, but they have the Beagle Boys and they have that, like a bunch of different Donalds and everything. That was a decent plot, but because so much goes on, you don't get character moments where I feel like Christmas at Bear Mountain, there, because the cast is much smaller, there's more character moments.
I thought it was fun.
Did you like Christmas at Bear
Mountain? That was... So, Kevin, you had this book to present to, and that was what you were going to present.
No.
Maybe it's good that Andrew took the reins. Took the lead on this. Maybe you're more of like a color commentator to the straight man.
No, the funny thing is that I recently acquired some other duck books too, because I'm like, when if duck books are at every checkout or at every convenience store, I'm like, I gotta buy some duck books, right? And I was trying to figure out which. It's funny because that one had just come out, and then I'm like, oh my god, I'm gonna wash in duck books. So I'm like, I have some like old, like, is it like 1952 or 1954? I don't know.
Nice.
Like, collection of, I guess it's the entire year. I mean, I'm going to research it when I bring it up on Indie Comic Book News. But yeah, it looks like it's the entire year from the duck books. So I was just like, wow. I'm like, how about that?
Well, the new story is a bit more of the modern sort of heavy rendering, I'll say, for lack of a, you know, where the color work is doing a lot more of the lifting. So that might have put me against it more than I liked kind of the old school flat colors.
Mean, they could have toned down the colors a little bit in certain spots when there's like writing on the signs. So you can like read the signs a little bit better, but then like you can tell where there's like cross hatching and all that. So that was like seeing different styles and stuff like that was kind of fun. So there's that too. Like, it's not just a purely storytelling thing. It's like, watch these guys draw some stuff that I haven't seen like all the time. Like, I don't have a lot of duck stuff. I mean, I bought one thing a while ago. I never got around to it. And I'm like, I know I should get around to it, but you know, it's just one of those many things you have in a stack. And I'm like, yeah, one of these days.
I've got the two oversized hardcovers of The Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck with the Don Rosa art. And I've got sketches in each one of them, of course. And those are great because Rosa was an engineer. So it's not just the ducks, it's the environment they're in. Like, it's the catapult that really is built to work. It's the boat. It's the, you know, it's like Sergio Aragonés art where it's you look at the boat and all the noodles around it and how it all makes, you know, it's the rich, lush, detailed, realistic world that these characters are placed in that are part of the visual presentation that I enjoy. I'm not into like the DuckTales and the and the duck, you know, as the Phantom or whatever that stuff is. but, you know, the classic Huey, Dewey and Louie stuff and Donald and Uncle Scrooge, that stuff's awesome.
And I knew enough before when there was a Don Rosa panel to go to that at a con. So
he's a character.
I'm along the right path.
No, there's hope for you yet. I've always said that.
Yeah, there's no hope for me, but definitely
no.
Hope
for no. It's too late for you.
In the multiverse of Kevin's, like, there's one that's a super duck fan.
All right, I read the two most recent Moon Knight books, but they're not the same series, even though they're the same writer. There's the Vengeance of the Moon Knight series that we've been reading, right? Jed McKay writes it. Devmalia Premonick does the art in issue number 6, which is a Blood Hunt tie-in. And the Midnight Mission gang are on a mission, naturally. And it's to save as many in the neighborhood as they can from the vampire hordes. There's eternal darkness. They've blocked out the sun and the moon. So you've just got vampires running amok. And what they're doing is they're bringing people to the mission. They're like trying to save people in their apartments and give them safe passage to the midnight mission, because inside it's other dimensionally large and it can totally house like all these neighborhood refugees, if you will. And it can house them all. And it itself is a character in the book. And I've loved this title's focus on the excellent supporting cast that McKay has developed here with Moon Knight. They serve the same purpose and fill the void that's left by the absence of the old Doug Munch supporting cast, Marlene and Frenchie and the butler and Gina and her boys and Crawley. Now you've got this Dr. Andrea and Reese and Soldier, who are both vampires, 8-Ball, Tigra, Hunter's Moon, and the mission building itself, that are all these supporting characters that have been carrying the book in Moon Knight's absence. And this Blood Hunt thing, having these tie-ins, rather than it interrupting what's going on in this title, it's been a perfect little thing for event for them to have to deal with in their own way, because they're like a little bit like Daredevil, where their scope is, you know, they're really effective, but their scope is small. It's their neighborhood, you know, like Daredevil's is with Hell's Kitchen. So they're managing things there for the people that know, where to find them, for the people who are the travelers of the night that go there for refuge and to ask for help, that kind of thing. I continue to enjoy this book, even though Moon Knight's not in it.
Yeah, I made sure that I loaded that up on my portable device.
Devices.
Yes, devices, and make sure I catch up on Adventures of Moon Knight and get that fancy little zero issue there.
Well, that's the other thing. Totally unsolicited.
Yeah.
Really came out of nowhere was Moon Knight Fist of Khonshu Zero. Also written by Jed McKay, but with art by Alessandro Capuccio, who is usually the artist on the Vengeance title. And this book is, it felt like an old wizard insert, Kevin.
That's a good example.
Because, like, if you did the stopwatch test on this, you would be probably disappointed, but I was still satisfied, especially since it was an addendum to the regular issue that we did expect this month. It was more like, what the heck is this? And the issue is told almost all in splash pages. There's one page that has multiple panels, but otherwise it's all splashes. So that right there, I mean, it felt like one of those wizard inserts to me. And the book is narrated by Khonshu, and it's his story. His story, like through history, how the moon fights the demons that Nightfall brings, you know, historically, and especially vampires. And then the editor's column states that it's the first title in a new line of like Midnight Suns type books, where there's going to be Moon Knight and Daredevil and Ghost Rider and Werewolf by Night, and that's going to be the dark, mysterious, demonic corner of the Marvel Universe.
So no Darkhold? We're not getting a Darkhold book or that whole business?
The guy with the body parts that falls off?
Yeah, yeah.
Terror Inc.
Isn't there a Midnight Suns book? So, you know, we're on our way to a Darkhold.
Yeah, well, no, I think it's going to be a Spirits of Vengeance title, actually. It's going to be called with the Ghost Rider in it. But So this issue also, this Moon Knight Fist of Khonshu, boasted on the cover that, you know, Moon Knight's back and Mark Spector's back and all that. And if you're reading the regular Blood Hunt book, there's a whole tie-in to Khonshu and his status having been imprisoned in Asgard since the whole Avengers thing where he tried to you know, remake reality in like a Sphinx Egypt kind of way. And no longer. So now that he's free, he can resurrect Spectre, and we can have our Moon Knight back. But yeah, the Scooby gang doesn't know that yet. So that's still to come too. And what title that'll happen in, who knows? Will it be Fist of Khonshu, Vengeance of the Moon Knight, or the Blood Hunt book? Or we'll see.
Yeah, I started wondering if I was enjoying the Vengeance book more than, you know, when I started stacking the Moon Knight book. This is weird.
You needed the one. This book wouldn't be as enjoyable if it hadn't been for those issues, though, because you want to see more of this supporting cast, and, yeah, and this is what we're getting, right?
It's yeah, true.
Good title.
And then since I was, it's weird because McKay was doing that Avengers book, and then I was like, I don't know about this, except for a few issues. And then, you know, he turns around reading his other stuff, and I'm like, no, he's doing this, he's doing the stuff I enjoy. So I don't know. Sometimes he's a little hard to figure out, but I do enjoy some of his stuff. So, I mean, that's always good.
There's a lot to choose from.
Yeah, that's true. You can mix and match.
I'm only two issues in, but I've been enjoying these ambiguously dated miniseries. So Venom Separation Anxiety.
Hmm.
The David Michelinie, Geraldo Sandoval book, which is set there. It's Venom feels like it's pretty early on. I don't know if they give a date or anything in particular, but he's still like, I have to crush Spider-Man for rejecting Venom. And the Purple Man, and there's a reference to the Emperor Doom storyline.
Oh, really?
Oh, so it's like, Michelinie
wrote that.
Yeah, so I feel like this is supposed to, you know, Venom's after Spider-Man, so what else is new? But he ends up falling in. The Vault has a new rehabilitation program where the Purple Man is.
Is it a death trap, though?
I mean, Purple Man's going to escape. You know, obviously, mild spoilers at this. So, in his search to crush Peter / Spider-Man, he looks at the paper and he sees that Joy, the reporter who we used to work with, who took over because she didn't make up a bunch of fake stories. He's going to track her because she often gets assigned Peter Parker as her photographer. So, you know, if you want to go kill her, kill Peter, you track her. And so they have a kind of a tentative alliance. And I feel like they're not quite used to Venom like other people. So she's pretty scared, but she makes a deal with like, okay, you be my photographer. And then we'll go. And then during the rehab, it all hell breaks loose and the Purple Man gets out. But the Purple Man bonds with a piece of the symbiote, which allows his grow to extend. Because at this point, Purple Man can only affect you if he touches you. So the symbiote allows him, obviously, those little strands can shoot out and he can touch people from further away. So he's looking to restore his full power. And that's his plot line. Venom is looking to get his symbiote sliver back. And meanwhile, you know, who was behind the breakout and all those people? So you have all those going on. Sandoval is a very detailed, but good for Venom because, like, big and bulky.
Yeah.
It's his thing. And there's a scene where they run into the Thing, another big, bulky guy, just impossibly huge. And so that part's fun, the depiction of those fights. I'd kind of forgotten the sort of kind of basic Eddie Brock. And it's weird, like, the sliver of the symbiote goes off. For me, I'm enjoying it, too, because unlike you guys, I haven't memorized the symbiote family tree of, like, all the crazy different people and all that stuff. And I know you guys love that stuff.
Okay, I found Super it Steve, Nathan 500 right now.
Shriek. Carnage.
So for me to go to a world where there isn't, like, literally everyone in the MCU has had a symbiote, and there isn't, you know, the dragon god or what, all that, which is all fine stuff, but it's just a lot. So because I'm old and dumb, it's nice to go to a world where it was just kind of Venom doing his thing. And the relationship between the two of them are kind of key, and there aren't all these other ones. And I don't know, maybe we're going to flash forward to something and it'll be in the middle of the recent Venom wars and all that stuff. But fun. I don't know how many issues it is. Three issues are out at the time of this recording. I've only read the first two, but we'll plan to finish it. I mean, Kevin probably knows how many issues this goes. They stopped putting, you know, like one of whatever.
Yeah. It probably says on the inside, though, right? Somewhere?
Does it?
Yeah, it's a four or five. I can't remember which.
Yeah, something like that.
Nothing's six anymore.
No, but like I said, I think it's fun. A tight cast. Old-timey Venom. What's not to like?
I don't know. Maybe people don't like eating brains. I don't know.
That could be. I also think that if you really love Venom, you're probably like, I want all those side characters and the rich mythology that Marvel has developed behind these. And the fact that there have been Venoms in Vietnam and all that weird stuff that, like,
toxic add
to the rich world.
And anti-Venom.
Yeah.
He's not a Venom.
He's so
the anti-Venom.
But he's symbiotic.
He's the anti-Venom.
He's a Venom-like character. Born of Venom. He was once Venom.
I mean, I guess technically Eddie was once Venom. So.
But wasn't he? Isn't Flash Thompson anti-Venom?
Yeah, Flash Thompson.
Right. Which is ridiculous in its own right.
I mean,
war hero Flash Thompson.
I mean, that series went through so many, like, status quos that you could have built an entire series around.
Which, yeah.
I mean, I appreciate in like that Morrison way of just like in your story, just tossing off other stories that you could have done tons of stories about. And it's like, I got so many ideas. I just got to get rid of them.
I like when they do the Frankencastle kind of thing with Venom. Like we've had like Soldier Venom. We've had like Outer Space Knight Venom. You know?
Yeah, Frank a Flash was the Venom for a while. Yeah, it's all fun stuff. I just, it's nice for old people to have something where, hey, Andy, are you confused by all the different symbiotes? Here's a little story where there aren't 10,000 of them.
Yeah, you just have to remember that it's crunchy on the outside, chewy on the inside when you eat people.
Brains.
Exactly. Yeah, and I also think he does a decent, like, Venom can descend into silliness pretty quickly, and I think he does a decent job of walking that line. I mean, maybe some people find it too silly, yeah.
It's a function of him opening his mouth. Venom dialogue. Yeah. You're not going to get any Eisners for writing Venom dialogue.
You know who is going to get Eisners, though? Jeff the Landshark. He came through. Best humor publication.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
All right, then.
I mean, someone's reading Jeff.
I've read some of the Unlimited. I haven't read any paper comics, but I've read some of his digital stuff.
Yeah, I really need to get more on some of that digital stuff that they release weekly. Because there's one that's supposed to be the X-Men. Like, sort of bridging the gap between Krakoa and From the Ashes. So, I mean, it's there. I'm like, I'm paying for it. I might as well read some, right? What am I waiting for?
Exactly. Well, since we mentioned some of Deadpool's pets, I have been reading the new Deadpool series after liking the beginnings of the other one, but then I thought it kind of faded on me, or at least my interest in it faded. But this series is written by Cody Ziegler, And the art in issues 3 and 4 are by Raj Antonio. And it's a parental advisory book. In the series, Venom is teamed up with his symbiote garbed demon dog daughter. Do you need me to repeat that? It's a symbiote
demon dog.
A symbiote garbed demon dog daughter. I mean, he's got his human daughter too, and actually, she's a part of this series, and she's starting to show some abilities and needs some training. And who better to do training than Deadpool's new partner in the status quo that's established in this book, his new merc partner for their merc business, and it's the Taskmaster.
Mm.
And Deadpool is facing a lethal new adversary, the sword-wielding, white-costumed ninja type, the mysterious Death Grip. And Death Grip has hired Crossbones to go after Taskmaster and Deadpool. I mean, that's a comic worth checking out, right?
Not sure how Crossbones can hurt Deadpool in any meaningful
But talk about
way,
guys but... shooting at each other, throwing yeah. little grenades yeah, at each yeah. other, yeah. fighting each other.
A lot of skull
other.
Themes going on.
I mean, Taskmaster and Crossbones and Deadpool all fighting each other. That's fun. And I'm glad I did check out the book because it's violent, it's action-packed, and it's weird with the giant daughter dog thing. For real.
If Dogman showed up then, I mean, I would be sold right away.
I'm going to segue with that Dogman comment in a second. But before I leave Deadpool, do you remember the Muramasa blade from, I guess it was in Wolverine?
You mean like the first storyline, like Sword Quest or something like that?
It was a blade that could kill those with a healing factor. It like took away your healing factor, and there was a whole thing. It might have been in the Greg Pak Wolverine book, like around issue 50, I want to say.
It's also in the Marvel Snap mobile game, Steve.
Is it?
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah, if you get the Dokken Light Rock character, he comes with a separate card that's the Murakami Blade. And if destroy it, he gets extra points. So,
well, in issue 4, this Death Grip dude absorbs the blade's properties into himself and then has a physical confrontation with Deadpool that carried a lot of weight. I'm curious to see what happens in issue 5. But speaking of dog men, and other good Jed McKay books and Blood Hunt tie-ins, I read Doctor Strange number 17 that's written by Jed McKay with art by Pascal Ferry under Alex Ross covers on the whole series. And this is the third Blood Hunt tie-in book from Doctor Strange. And Strange is like he's a vampire in stasis in the Sanctum Sanctorum, and his astral form is off helping the heroes deal with the main Blood Hunt plot line. And these tie-ins in Doc's book are more focused on the Doc's ghost dog and his pet snakes, who get trapped in the crypt of Shadows, which is a fun callback to the old Crypt of Shadows book, but they use it to this like mirror dimension. It's almost like the Phantom Zone from the movies with the flying floating mirror through space. And Strange's pets get stuck in the Crypt of Shadows, accidentally releasing Strange's vampire brother, who was kept prisoner there. So then he's loose in the mansion stalking Wong, who's not entirely defenseless, but this guy's a vampire coming after him. So he does have the mansion itself and the nooks and crannies there to kind of help him maintain his distance. But Strange's brother, vampire brother, is definitely closing on Wong here. So Strange's pets the dog and the two snakes enlist the help of the other resident of the Crypt of Shadows prison, Baron Mordo. And it's like, will he help? Can he help? If he does, will it be in time to help Wong? Solid storytelling. The snakes are cool, and I love their dialogue. They're like a little Heckle and Jekyll going back and forth at each other. And the ghost dog, who has been a favorite character, I think, of everyone's since he first appeared in the Dugan written Deadpool series there. He calls upon the power of, like, the dog god and becomes this, like, humanoid dog godlike light based being and help save the day. It's a really cool moment, and it's not something so they set it up in a way that it can't be repeated, but the book is really enjoyable, and it's more good McKay doing good things with the supporting cast of the book while the main character is off doing something else in another Jed McKay book. So yeah, there's a couple of quick hits. Deadpool and Doctor Strange.
His whole Moon Knight was, I guess, setting up the whole blood hunt thing. Who knew? I have one question now, though, for Andrew, since the whole Marvel Snap thing came up, is if he's going to buy the art of Marvel Snap.
I didn't know there was a book for it. They need it for the... Yeah, no, I'm just... I've enjoyed... I was looking for a new mobile game, and it's fun and silly, and so I'm playing it for a while. I'm sure, much like the other one, after a while, I'll get tired and delete it, but they're free, and there's plenty of time where you're just killing time. And
yeah. Why not play a silly... They're putting out a hardcover, over 200 pages. So, yeah, I mean, I guess it'll be more permanent, like... To delete that, you'd have to burn it then.
They have a lot of the art of books. I don't have a single one, but for all the movies and everything, games, because I see them as giveaways for the, you can enter to win a chance with your Marvel Insider points. And I think I entered a few times, but usually I don't. I don't know. They're not. I don't know. I don't know. For some reason I like comic book process stuff. Like video game process stuff and modern movie process stuff, I find less interesting. I think because so much of it's obviously in the computer now. Not that VFX aren't interesting, but I don't want a book about how some guy had to spend 47 hours consecutively in front of a computer, you know, erasing telephone lines or whatever.
Well said.
I mean, it's important work, but it's not my jam. Well, I know, Super Steve, thanks to your recommendation, I did pick up another reprint book, Giant Size Silver Surfer.
Ooh.
I liked it. I mean, I'm glad you said something, because I never would have got it based on the cover.
Yeah, there's a Brian Hitch cover that isn't... I mean, it's Silver Surfer versus Terax, but whatever.
Yeah, it's not like their dynamic pose, but it's just not an engaging cover at all. My eyes kind of glaze over it, and I don't know what.
It's a weird composition, and the anatomy is a little wonky.
Yeah, but it's a Terex story, and he's always like the most bombastic of the heralds. So I always like having him around. I mean, no offense to the Airwalker or any of the other ones, but he's the one you want for a big fight. So it's once again him just getting housed by the Silver Surfer. It's fun for like a super powered guy. It's just so funny that it's like, you know, Lucy and Charlie Brown with a football or something.
Totally.
So it's fun to see how he's gonna get beat, because he is powerful, but you like Silver Surfer is just always on that next level that makes it fun to see how he's going to win. And then why it's a giant size is they have a big reprint in the back of a previously existing, like I said, if you want to see some fun old comics reprinted on worse paper. This is the book for
I like how the whole confrontation is set up, though. Like, we get everything is from Terax's point of view. So we get to see him, like, what he's been up to, right? Like, he's busy subjugating people and trying to, you know, he's abusing his Galactus-given power cosmic. And he's, at the same time, always having to shake these comparisons to Galactus's first and greatest herald, the Silver Surfer. So he's so frustrated at this that he sets up like a trap confrontation. And then, you know, midway through the book, Silver Surfer comes rolling in as he's supposed to. But he doesn't play along as he's supposed to. Like, Terax thinks he's got the, you know, him right where he wants him. And he's got these innocents that are threatened, and he's going to kill these innocents if the Surfer doesn't do this and this, and the Surfer just doesn't do anything that Terax wants at all, and that just makes him even more angry. And of course they get into a big physical confrontation too, and it's a really enjoyable characterization of Terax. And then, as you said, the reprint is from the Surfer's book back when my pal Ron Mars was writing it, and with the Ron Lim, Tom Christopher art, and it's where Terax has to fight Morg, which was Ron's addition to the Herald Pantheon.
And I would also love Terax-y. To see Terax in, like, a super group. Like, I think he would be a fun...
Oh, yeah, he's like a real group player. Like
I said, the bombastic, his oversized... Like, clearly he's compensating because he's been for all his problems, but I don't know, just a fun character. And like I said, watching the Silver Surfer, how he comes out on top is going to be entertaining. With these giant-sized books, the gimmick is, the hook is the print, the reprint book, like the old ones too. So, but yeah, like I said, it's just funny that all these reprints abound and doesn't seem to be hurting anything.
It's the 50th anniversary of the giant size books, too. I think that's what the 50 giant size on stamped on all these giant size covers this year is all about.
Yeah, $7, kids. So,
yikes.
Comics have come a long way in 50 years on the price point.
Any others, Kevin?
I keep on thinking about that Ghost Spider. Weird Ghost Spider book with Spider-Gwen, now knowing that we're going to see some more TVA action in the future, that she's on some weird TVA team. I don't know.
Huh.
It's strange. Still trying to wrap my head around the whole thing. Like,
I like that she's both Spider-Gwen and Ghost Spider right on the cover now, though.
I mean, yeah, might as well.
That'll help. That'll help with the trend.
That Ghost Spider's never gonna have it's like Baby Yoda. Like, they just, like, it's, that's, she's Spider Gwen. So just,
but that's her name.
But that's not her name.
I appreciate you trying. Like, but it's Spider Gwen and it's Baby Yoda. Like, you just that's how it works out, you know? Sometimes you don't control things.
But in the books, he's like Spider Woman. I mean, traditionally, she was Spider-Woman in the book. Because, I mean, that's the cool thing. You were in your own universe. It's like, it's definitely a weird thing, because we already did the... She comes over to our universe, and they made up, like, a reasonable explanation about, oh, she's going to school in our universe, and Tony Stark has this thing, and there's scholarships, and she's going to school. And then this one, like, is just did, like... I don't know. It seemed like it called attention to the fact that what it was doing, and then saying, oh, you can't set up a bank account. Like, basically all the other one was like pretty smooth and everything. And it's just like, yeah, here's the explanation. Let's move on. And then the new one's kind of like drawing attention to itself. So, I mean, find it a little less smooth, I guess. And sometimes it irritates me. But I mean, I don't know. We'll see how this TVA thing works out, right?
But yeah.
It's a weird fit, but I mean, I guess it could work. I mean,
she could be like the Exiles.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, I do like, if she was in her own universe, and some of her best stories too were also like crossing over with the main Marvel universe and teaming up with the other Spider-Women. So, I mean, I realize that people can make it work because it's already worked. So if you're doing the whole TVA thing, then you can go around to all these different places.
Yeah,
so,
and she's, I mean, someone who
doing that thing.
She's someone who's not going to be totally discombobulated by being in a new reality too, right? Because she's done this. She's bounced around some. So like I'd see like her and America Chavez and a couple of these characters that could make a team like that.
Yeah, plus she works alone and she can work in a team. I think it's a flexible character that way, more so than other ones. And that character design. Because that's what made it a star. I feel the same way about the Hallows Eve character. Like, I like the design.
Yeah, good design, that's for sure.
It's almost got me to buy the toy. I might end up buying the toy at some point.
I bought the toy. I mean, I didn't buy the Ben Reilly one. Maybe I should have, right? To have them go together.
Yeah. I like them together.
Buy the toys you like. Don't buy the ones you feel the need to.
I mean, it's much better than Cyclops and his teen outfit or whatever he's wearing in X-Men now. I don't know what the deal is with that.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
I don't know. I mean, maybe I'll get used to it. Check back in 6 months.
Ending on a high note, I visited the Norman Rockwell Museum recently with my pal and friend of the show, Jim Whiting. And we visited the Norman Rockwell Museum because they are having a Mad Magazine art gallery exhibit and museum exhibit. And boy, was it fun to walk through and see a lot of the old original art from the usual gang of idiots, as they're called, and see cool podium displays of old memorabilia and things that suggest the origins of Alfred E. Newman and things along those lines that made it more than just a gallery show. But I'll talk more about that visit over on our sister show, Indie Comic Book Noise, the next time I'm on. But I wanted to mention here that not only did they have Mad Magazine art, but they had a wall that was dedicated to some of the spin-offs, as they called them, of Mad Magazine. So they had some art from Cracked, and they had the original art to Marie Severin's issue number one of Crazy Magazine with that very legendary cover with Spider-Man getting the can of spiders insect killing spray sprayed on him, and the big group shot of everybody all over each other, basically. And along with that, they had a couple of other nice pieces of Marie Severin art along with her brother's art, John Severin, where they had not only some of his Cracked art but some of his old EC art, which was really cool to see. And they both mentioned their careers with Marvel Comics beyond the artwork that was presented there. So I thought that was pretty cool, seeing the original art to Crazy number one.
Yeah, Cracked, I remember liking. You know, it did feel like the off-brand Mad, but that was fine. It was still,
but it was the Severn art, right? I mean, he was the one that really. The really cool thing, though, was that the museum program for the gallery show was set up like a Mad magazine, and have a bunch of cool articles and pieces, all the pieces that they had on the wall. They have a bunch of them reprinted in the magazine, so you didn't have to take pictures of each one and that kind of thing. And they had the Frazetta Tarzan piece there. They had, there's so much cool stuff. But anyway.
Have you ever been to, isn't there a Frazetta Museum in Pennsylvania or something?
There is.
One of those trips out to the East Coast, I should try and get over there.
Remember when Frank was old and they were like fighting over his inheritance? His son backed a couple of backhoes into the back of the museum and stole a bunch of paintings and everything when they were, the family was all fighting. Crazy. I would like to get down there. That would be cool. I saw some pictures recently of people at San Diego Comic-Con holding up Frazettas, and posting them online and people wondering, did you buy a Frazetta? And Joe just goes like, no, I'm not buying a Frazetta. I can't afford a Frazetta. You've got a crazy idea what people in this industry make if you think I can buy a Frazetta. Like, yeah, I think Peepoy and a couple of other people were holding Frazettas up, so they must have had maybe his granddaughters, the Frazetta girls, had some of his art there or something.
Yeah, I think one of his pieces was on Heritage not too long ago. Yeah, it's a chunk of change if you want to buy one of those paintings.
Yeah, and rightly so. Modern master indeed. All right, on that note, thanks for tuning in, everybody. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Kevin, as always. Until Khonshu lays an egg, make mine marble. Later.